Today is October 28th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com. I'm sick.
You know, I thought you were just being sultry today.
Well, I know that I do sound, in fact, extra sultry and and stuff, but I've had a cold, so I don't even have leopard. I wasn't able to attend any of the leopard events, and it's going to be you when it comes time to talk about leopard, Jeff.
Well, that's okay, because I wasn't sick, and I was able to go to the Flatiron Crossing Apple Store in Broomfield, Colorado, and my copy of Leopard had shown up in the morning anyhow, so I have it installed, and I've already been playing with it, so I'm sure we'll be able to fumble our way through some exciting Leopard info.
I am sure that you are right. Now, before we go on too much further, though, we should remind readers to about our hotel special that we're doing with the Hotel Milano for Macworld.
Right, right. That's, what, about $5 below what you can get from the IDG special deals, right?
Right. It's $154 a night, which is $5 less than you can book it directly through IDG. And that price, that the IDG's price, is already discounted. So it's definitely an extra discount on top of another discount, and I doubt you're going to find a better deal. Certainly not at a place as nice as the Hotel Milano.
And it's pretty close to the convention center.
Yeah, it's about a block and a half from Moscone West. And as I said last week, that's a long block and a half. And it's basically probably two full blocks to the normal Moscone Center, the east and west Moscone Center. No, wait, north and south?
North-south.
Yeah, north-south halls. So it's very close. It's a nice place. Dave and I have talked about this a lot. Dave Hamilton, TMO's president and the co-host of the Mac Geek Gab, and Jeff. Anyway, we've all looked at the fact that their website doesn't do a very good job of presenting the hotel, but I actually went to the Milano and a couple of other hotels to see which one we wanted to work with, and Milano seemed like the best place for people who, you know, especially if you want to make sure you have internet access and things like that.
So in this case, along the lines of don't judge a book by its cover, don't judge this hotel by its website.
Indeed. Yeah, I like the place. I did. And, you know, we've stayed at all kinds of hotels throughout the years. And, you know, for a while, right after the terrorist attacks of September 11th, hotel prices went down, just, you know, way down. And we were able to stay in some nice places.
Right. And, yeah, prices are going up a little bit now.
Yeah, prices are going up. Actually, they've gone up quite a bit. It's kind of annoying, to be honest. But nonetheless, it's very nice that we've got this deal going with Milano, because it puts us pretty close to the center again, and nice, comfortable rooms that are big rooms, and, you know, they all had desks, and that's important to me, and I know it's important to all of us because we're working.
Right.
And but I imagine it's going to be important to a lot of geeks who are going to Macworld, because they want to make sure that they can get online, too.
Oh, absolutely. And because of the proximity to Moscone, if they need to run home during the middle of the day to drop off swag or whatever, they can do that and get back quickly.
And we've already had a number of rooms that have been reserved, folks. So if you really want to take advantage of this, you should probably do so sooner rather than later. You know, this place is going to fill up at some point, and this is your way to do it for, like I said, even less than you can get it through IDG. And with that, what do you think? Time for the news?
Sure. As long as we're here, we might as well.
As long as we're here, we might as well.
That's right. Apple released its fourth quarter earnings report, and the numbers were great. macOS 10.5 leapt onto the scene Friday evening. Microsoft gave in to EU antitrust demands. The controversy over the Greenpeace iPhone report is still going on. iPhone developers have a new resource. And the iPod turned 6.
Mm-hmm. Apple Inc. announced Monday its fiscal 2007 fourth quarter financial results of revenue of $6.22 billion U.S. And that was a profit of $904 million, or $1.01 per share, blowing past consensus estimates of revenue of $6.05 billion and a profit of 85 cents a share. Peter Oppenheimer, Apple CFO, said, quote, Apple ended the fiscal year with $15.4 billion in cash and no debt. Looking ahead to the first quarter of fiscal 2008, we expect revenue of about $9.2 billion and earnings per diluted share of about $1.42, unquote. My, how times have changed, huh, Jeff?
Indeed.
Apple shipped a record 2.164 million Macs. That's a record, folks. A 34% year-over-year gain, some 400,000 units higher than the previous record. Apple also sold 10.2 million iPods, a 17% year-over-year gain. The company also announced that it sold 1.119 million iPhones during the quarter. For the fiscal year, Apple sold 1.389 million iPhones. The company had previously estimated it would sell 10 million iPhones by the end of calendar 2008, or the end of the December quarter.
And Apple stock topped $186 per share this past week, putting the company's value or market cap at $162 billion. That's now larger than IBM at $159 billion and Intel at $155 billion, and fourth in terms of computer companies, behind only Cisco at $189 billion, Google at $208 billion, and Microsoft at $290 billion. Now, in comparison, Dell, which is often seen as the dominant PC maker, closed on Friday at $28.98 with a market cap of $64.8 billion. Some of our listeners may remember Michael Dell's infamous statement from about 10 years ago. He suggested Apple should shut down, sell its assets, and return the money to the shareholders.
Oh, my, how times have changed.
Oh, yes.
Apple estimates that is, that some 250,000, a quarter million, of the nearly 1.4 million iPhones sold through the September quarter were purchased specifically to be unlocked and used with a different carrier other than AT&T. AT&T pays Apple a portion of the monthly fees it collects from iPhone users, so the number of unlocked units translates to what some perceive as a hit to Apple's bottom line, as well as to AT&T's bottom line. On first glance, the high number, nearly 20%, may seem surprising, but keep in mind that many of those phones were likely purchased for use outside the United States, where there currently are no carriers offering iPhone service contracts. The first will come in November when O2, T-Mobile, and Orange begin selling the iPhone in Europe.
And Apple started the week with its stellar earnings report and then ended it with the launch of macOS 10.5, or Leopard. I covered the launch from Apple's Flatiron Crossing store in Broomfield, Colorado, where lines began forming at 3:30 in the afternoon for the 6 p.m. launch. When the store reopened its doors for the launch event, the line was well over 100 people long, and copies of Leopard were flying out the door about as fast as employees could sell them.
Our own Vern Seward paid a visit to a Best Buy in Orlando, Florida, to see what type of turnout Leopard would get. What he found was, well, nothing. Apple has many stores and many Best Buys around the United States where shoppers can test and buy Apple-related products and software. When he packed up and moved over to the Millennium Mall Apple store, however, he found the same excitement in crowds that Jeff saw in Colorado.
And the excitement from the macOS 10.5 launch may be only a couple of days old, but that isn't stopping Apple from putting its sights on what comes next. The future of macOS 10 still has plenty of growing room, and CEO Steve Jobs expects to offer new operating system versions about every 12 to 18 months, using Leopard as the foundation. Mr. Jobs said, quote, I'm quite pleased with the pace of new operating systems every 12 to 18 months for the foreseeable future. We've put out major releases on the average of one a year, and it's given us the ability to polish and polish and improve and improve, end quote. That means we'll probably be seeing several more cat names associated with macOS 10 in the coming years.
I think my favorite is going to be macOS Tabby. Is that what you called it, Jeff?
Tabby, that's the one I'm totally looking forward to.
And macOS Calico. While Apple was experiencing a decidedly upbeat week, Microsoft finally threw in the towel and agreed to comply with the European Union's 2004 antitrust decision against the company. The move follows a three-year battle where a Redmond company worked to gain concessions from the EU Competition Commission, according to Reuters. EU Competition Commissioner Neelie Kroes commented, quote, "The repercussions of these changes will start now and will continue for years to come. It is a victory for the consumer." The EU has found Microsoft guilty of using its monopoly status to control the software industry. And for the first few years, the company had been fighting the EU ruling, which required the release of information about Windows code to third-party developers. Microsoft failed to fully comply with the commission's requirements and was subsequently fined €500,000 in 2004 and €280.5 million in 2006. While the commission has no plans to impose additional fines now, it is keeping that as an option should Microsoft fail to remain in compliance with the rulings.
Microsoft's battle with the EU may finally be coming to an end, and we wish we could say the same about the ongoing story surrounding the Greenpeace attack on the iPhone. Greenpeace called Apple to task over chemicals found in the iPhone, and now a chemical industry organization is doing the same to the environmental activist group. The Bromine Science and Environmental Forum, or BSEF, claims the brominated chemicals found in the iPhone's earbuds are not only allowed, but are necessary to help prevent potential fires. The BSEF report stated, quote, "The brominated flame retardant most likely used in the iPhone is actually a reactive, i.e. it reacts with other substances to form a plastic and, once reacted, it is also no longer available to the environment. The Greenpeace report is incorrect in its assertions about the potential for releases to the environment," end quote. The report also stated the Greenpeace study does not specify which brominated flame retardants are present in the iPhone because the organization does not know, meaning the report raises concerns based on speculation instead of fact. The BSEF also pointed out that while there are alternatives to brominated flame retardants, or BFRs, they have not been well tested. The group added, quote, "In fact, all the substances reported by Greenpeace are approved for use and provide critical performance and safety functions in a wide range of electronic products," end quote.
Greenpeace fired back with its own response defending its report with a statement from the organization's impressively titled International Web Editor, Tom Dowdle. He stated, quote, "The study clearly identified bromine in a wide range of materials and components in the iPhone. The technique used is widely recognized for this purpose," that's XRF or X-ray fluorescent spectrometry. "Similarly, analysis of other hazardous chemicals in the iPhone, such as phthalates, were conducted using recognized techniques." Mr. Dowdle went on to explain that it was not possible to determine exactly which brominated chemicals are used in the iPhone, an issue that the BSEF pointed out, because current chemical analysis tools aren't capable of pinpointing which form of the chemical was used. The only way to know for sure, he explained, is for Apple to release the information. While watchdogging companies to ensure that consumers are not exposed to hazardous chemicals is an admirable act, the public attack on Apple and the iPhone may have a different motive behind it, namely headline grabbing. In a rebuttal to Gizmodo's attack on Greenpeace, Mr. Dowdle commented, quote, "While it might not make as many headlines as the iPhone, it doesn't mean that we are not focusing on all manufacturers to remove toxic chemicals from their products."
Apple promised to release a software developer kit for the iPhone and iPod Touch next February, so until then, the only officially sanctioned applications for the devices will be web-based. To that end, Apple expanded its developer connection program to include iPhone-specific support in its iPhone Dev Center. The new coder's source includes documentation and guides, sample code, web development guidelines, videos, instructions on submitting web-based applications for inclusion in Apple's online listing, and more. The Apple Developer Connection is free to join, and you can check it out at developer.apple.com.
Wrapping up this week's news, the iPod turns 6. During its first 6 years, the iPod has gone from a 5-gig Mac-only music player to a cross-platform 160-gig music and video player and the most popular media player on the market. The first iPod cost $399 and measured 2.43 by 4.02 by 0.78 inches. In comparison, the 160-gig iPod Classic, the model that most closely physically matches the original, costs $349 and measures 2.4 by 4.1 by 0.53 inches. Where the original was essentially just a music player, later models added the ability to play videos and even games. The iPod skyrocketed in only a few short years from being a why-would-anyone-pay-that-much-for-a-music-player product to a market-dominating must-have device. Apple has been able to maintain that 70% plus the market share control for the last few years by continuing to update and innovate, and by maintaining an easy-to-use and slick-looking product lineup. Happy birthday, iPod!
Woohoo!
Birthday! Oh, that riff means that it's time for the Context Machine, where Jeff and I delve a little more closely into the news to provide context for what's going on. So what's going
on
this week,
Jeff?
A
lot. Like, really a lot. So I say, why don't we just jump in and banter a bit about Apple's fourth quarter earnings report.
Yes, you mean where Apple made boatloads of money?
That would be the very one.
Okay, well, Apple made boatloads of money. Next.
Next.
You know, the thing I was most excited about were those record Mac shipments.
That was really amazing. And it's important for people to realize Apple is shipping record numbers of Macs in a market where other PC manufacturers are having trouble selling their product.
Well, Apple, I don't know if we can go that far, Jeff. Apple has seen year-over-year growth in its Mac shipments for the last 5 or 6 quarters, but that's been growth that's been higher than the industry growth, not in an industry slowdown.
Okay, but it sure sounds a lot better when I say it the way I did.
Well, that's true, and the facts be damned.
That's right.
So, you know, it's also very interesting to point out that, you know, you hear Apple selling 10.2 million iPods and Apple sold 2 million Macs. And so therefore, you know, the iPod is more important, but, you know, Apple's making a lot more money off those 2 million Macs.
Yeah, they certainly are. And one of the things that we had talked about briefly before we started recording was, who are all these people that are still buying all these iPods?
Yeah, that's amazing to me that they have been able to keep up the sales figures that they have for that device.
I know. I mean, by this point, everyone should have like 2.
Yeah, it seems like it. And of course, you know, a lot of people do have 2. A lot of people will get a Shuffle for exercising and, you know, whatnot. And I'm sure that a lot of people bought Touches just because it's so cool, and you know they have their previous generation 30 or 40 gig unit sitting around somewhere. But yeah, I mean, you know, this thing is just a juggernaut.
It is. And actually I do know several people that have multiple iPods, and like you were saying, they have different uses for each one.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I can see why people would have more than one. And I guess in fairness I should say, yeah, I have more than one also.
Well, I have more than one, too. It's true. My 40 gig, probably, I think, do I have a 3G or a 4G? I've got the last model that came out before the color screens.
Right.
And while I can carry everything around on it like I want to, the reality is I just pretty much put everything on that I want to carry on my 8 gig iPhone, and I'm good to go. And then I have a Shuffle for those rare times when I actually want to go do something like work out, and I'm using air quotes for that. I know it's sad, but anyway, the point is that the iPod is still selling, you know, lots and lots of units, but the average price on a Mac is, you know, many, many times higher than the average price on an iPod, and Apple's making a lot of money on the Macs right now, and, you know, that's great for our platform of choice as far as I'm concerned.
It is, and actually, one of the things that I've been seeing crop up on the interwebs lately is that there's a lot of people out there that think that Apple's earnings are going to continue to go up, there we go, and that's going to be in a very large part to the Mac. And the reasoning is there's a lot of Windows users out there that are really dissatisfied with Vista, and they're looking for an alternative, and now they're looking to the Mac.
Sure. I mean, you know, Tiger was already head and shoulders above Vista as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, now we've got Leopard.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what's happening right now is that Leopard is going to be compared to Vista by a lot of mainstream tech writers. But the reality is that when Tiger came out, it was being compared to Vista, and it was being compared to Vista favorably.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, a year and a half ago.
And here we are with Leopard today, which is a definite improvement in many ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I don't know, things do look good for Apple. I probably ought to pay more attention to what the wonks and the Apple finance boards are saying about this. But I do see, I also see Apple's future growth coming from the Mac side as the iPod becomes a somewhat mature product where there's actually plenty of room for the Mac to grow.
There is. And I think that Apple is being very clever, although also something totally necessary to do with the release, the pending release of the iPhone Software Developer Kit, because it's a wonderful way to actually get window coders to write for the Mac without even realizing they're writing for the Mac.
Sure, that is another sneaky little backdoor thing, and introduces folks to that concept, and that's definitely good. I hadn't really thought about that backdoor, Jeff. That's a good, very good point, man.
Hey, I sit around just thinking this stuff up.
Well, you know,
it's all I've got.
That's why we pay you the big bucks.
That's right. Oh wait, I get paid.
Anything else on their news reports? See, they made a lot of money. They say they're going to make even more money next quarter. Their market cap is just, it's almost insane.
It is. There was a time when I don't think anyone would have imagined being able to say, oh yeah, Apple's market cap is above IBM's.
Yeah, you know, IBM does $100 billion a year in business or more. I haven't actually looked at that in a couple of years, but the last time I looked, it was about $100 billion a year. And Apple's worth more doing a quarter of that, what were the numbers for this year, Jeff? I'm going to blame my fever for not remembering.
That's okay. All right. So let's see. Fourth quarter revenue, $6.22 billion.
It's close to $250 million. It was close to $25 billion for the year.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So basically, Apple's doing a quarter of what IBM does, but the market is valuing it substantially more. And Apple's, you know, profits are nothing to sneeze at. Their profits are very, very impressive.
Well, Apple knows how to run a lean machine.
Yeah, which is, you know, funny when you think about that being one of the major problems of Apple in the 90s was, you know, just how bloated and ridiculous the company was.
It was. You know, I remember back in the 90s when I was doing lots of consulting. No, that wouldn't have been right. Well, part of the 90s I was doing lots of consulting, and Apple had these traveling road shows that were relatively extravagant.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, take the day off work, go down to some center where for free Apple teaches you all about AppleScript, and they give you books and manuals and all kinds of stuff and send you on your way with a full tummy, all for free. And those days are kind of gone.
Mm-hmm. 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 Well, why don't we move on to Leopard itself?
I think that sounds great.
It's the star of the week.
I think it's the big star of the week, even though for a lot of people the figures were the big stars. Leopard, in the long run, for now, is going to be the really big star.
Indeed, and let's get to that burning question. What did the T-shirts look like?
You know, Brian, they really were the half T-shirt things like we thought. Now, actually, for people that didn't get to see the T-shirt, it was black and it has the purple galaxy thing with the X on the front of it.
Mm. Yay. Exciting. All right. Next.
Yeah. Next. Yeah. Okay. We can go home now.
What kind of installation did you do?
Okay. So the installation I did exactly what I thought that a lot of users would do that aren't experienced with doing other macOS 10 installations, which is pop the disk in and do an upgrade. So that's exactly what I did because I wanted to see what type of problems the average user was going to come up against, and I didn't have any.
Well,
it just went so smooth.
It's funny you should say that because I just got off the phone with Bob Levitis. That's Bob, Dr. Mac Levitis, for those keeping score at home. And he's been following developments this weekend about people who are doing just that kind of installation, and they're rebooting into a blue screen of death.
Which is not a good thing.
No, it's not. There's apparently some 48 pages of posts over at Apple's forums on the subject. People having lots of problems. Bob is actually writing up a report for us to publish on Monday, which is
excellent.
Probably the earliest that most folks will be listening to this broadcast. So, you know, they may have already seen it in print, but it looks like Apple's having a little bit of problem with some of the upgrades.
You know, I've heard several theories about what's going on, ranging from people forgot to disconnect hard drives, which who knows if that really played a role, all the way out to certain little hacks that people have been using were causing the problem.
Right, and we don't have any answers yet, folks. We just don't, and that's whenever you listen to this, that might still be the case. I'm going to say, though, that I would recommend people do an archive and install. That's the kind of installation that I always recommend anyway, certainly the installation that I do.
You know, one thing about doing an archive and install is that since it takes the system folder you're using this minute and just pushes it off to the side and creates a brand new one, if you've installed things that have added little things into that main level system folder that could be a problem or have become corrupted, that all gets pushed away to the side.
Mm-hmm.
So starting with a clean system folder, most of the time, I think that's a really, really good way to go.
Yeah, I've been recommending it since macOS 10 was introduced and Apple introduced that feature, which was that 10.1 or 10.2?
I think it was 10.2, but if I'm wrong, I can be pretty much sure that one of our listeners will let us know.
Oh,
set us straight.
Yeah, please, definitely do. It was either 10.1 or 10.2. I honestly forget which, but be that as it may, since Apple introduced it, I've been recommended. I've been using it. It is a great, I think it's the safest way to do an installation. You get all of your old settings, but in a completely new installation, and it's the safest way to go. And I think that that's going to have to be the way that we recommend folks do Leopard for sure.
I think that's a totally safe statement to make. And of course, don't forget to back up your important files.
Oh, always. Please back up before you install. Please, please, please back up before you install Leopard or before you install any major operating system.
Right.
You should always back up. It's very important. So now that we talked about the CYA things, let's look at your experience in actually using it.
Okay. I noticed that my laptop, and I'm actually using a 1.67. No, that's not the one I installed it on. I have a MacBook Pro from a Tech Restore.
Yay, Tech Restore.
Yeah, great guys. So, yeah, so Tech Restore, they gave me this MacBook Pro that I could do all this testing on. And I installed it, and I was expecting to immediately see a speed improvement, only because I had restarted my computer and it hadn't been restarted in like weeks. Mm. What I found, though, was that once I got past my initial, oh, hey, my computer's a little bit faster because I restarted, I noticed my computer was actually a lot faster.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, screen redraws are so much faster for me now. And, I have this problem in Mail where I like to have like probably about 50 windows open at once. Mm-hmm. And I'm not kidding. It really is probably about that many windows open at once. And that can really drag Mail down to its knees.
Oh, sure.
And what I found is that before, when I'd launch Mail and I'd have to wait a minute or so while it kept opening windows and putting them where I wanted it. I'm not kidding.
I believe you.
In Leopard, it just comes up and bloop, there's all these windows and it's done.
Hmm.
So that was a very pleasant surprise. So screen redraws are a lot faster. Things seem to be a lot more fluid. And although I'm having a little bit of a problem adjusting to the new unified look, only because I'm not used to seeing it everywhere,
mm-hmm.
I'm actually glad I'm seeing it everywhere because it's giving me a consistency to the interface, and I know exactly what to expect in every application now.
Well, but that's always been the case.
Right, but we've also had this kind of transition phase where we've had some windows that would have that steel bar look at the top,
yes.
And others it'd be a slightly different look at the top.
Yes, right. Right now I'm actually looking at the I've got windows in the background that have the steel, the breast metal look. I've got windows in the foreground that have the normal OS X look. What's it called? I'm going to blame my fever again. Anyway, it's got the normal OS X look. And then I've got GarageBand running right behind the front window. And it, of course, has the GarageBand look, which is, you know, completely different. So, yeah, that's true. The menu bars, in fact, have been different. So now they're all alike, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it's all consistent.
I see.
There have been several people that have complained about the translucency in the menu bar.
I was going to ask about that.
Now, I'm using a desktop picture that's dark on the edges and bright towards the center.
Mm-hmm.
So I am not having any issues with my menu bar. Now, some people were saying on darker backgrounds they had trouble. Other people are saying on lighter backgrounds they had trouble. I have a mixture, and I'm not having any issues seeing anything on my menu bar.
Well, you know, I've always been fond of the white menu bar at the top, and that's been one of the things I've not been looking forward to, but you're telling me that you don't mind it?
I don't mind it, but I would prefer it to be solid like it was before.
Doesn't it seem like that should be something that Apple gave us an option on?
I totally agree. This is an interface element that Apple absolutely should have given us a way to control.
Doesn't it seem like something that someone will hack in a matter of seconds?
Oh, I'm betting that by Wednesday it'll be hacked. I know that someone has already written up some kind of hack. I think it's something you do from the command line that changes the dock appearance so that tray thing is gone.
Mm.
And that was out like several hours before the Leopard launch.
That's awesome.
I thought that was great.
Yeah, now, I think that we'll probably be pretty busy covering a lot of hacks in the upcoming couple of weeks.
Yeah, and actually I'm planning on devoting a lot of my quick tips for the near future just to Leopard, because there's a lot of new things that people should know about.
Dude, you rock.
Hey, well, you know, I've got your back.
You do have my back. You're a good guy. You've got our readers' backs too. The TMO Quick Tip series is one of my favorite things that we have running on a recurring basis at TMO. And
you know, it's a lot of fun. Thanks. And it's a lot of fun to write.
That's good.
Yeah.
That is good. Let's see. How about things like Time Machine? Have you had any experience with that yet?
I've played with Time Machine just a little bit.
Yep.
And one of the first things I did was shut it off.
Mm-hmm.
But not because I was having trouble with it, because I was actually using bad backup practices with it, meaning that my daily backups that I'm doing with the .Mac backup application are going to this one specific external hard drive. When I first set up Time Machine, when I went through my initial setup after my first boot into Leopard, it found the drive and it goes, oh, hey, you want me to use Time Machine with this? And I went, okay, sure. And so it started creating its Time Machine archive on my other backup drive.
Mm.
That's a bad idea. The backup should be on separate drives. I'm not worried about performance or anything, but if one drive should fail, I lose both backups.
Right.
So the moral of that story is have two hard drives, one for your regular backup, one for your Time Machine backup. And the side moral is you can disable Time Machine if you need to, and you can reconfigure it later if you need to.
Hmm.
Which actually, read Monday's quick tip, because it talks about that specifically.
Excellent. You know, speaking of Bob Levitis, which we weren't really, but we were earlier.
But that was a great segue.
Thank you. The first time I encountered Bob was when I bought my first Power Computing machine. And Power Computing, Bob was one that was basically their spokesperson.
Right.
And their you know, man about town. And they shipped a copy of macOS 7.5 for Dummies with every new Power Computing machine. And that was a book that Bob wrote. And, you know, I thought he was a brilliant writer and, you know, so very funny. And I got to the backup section and he's talking about, like, you know, backing up everything on floppy drives and taking them down to the bank and putting them in a safety deposit box.
Oh.
And then, you know, like constantly rotating out three different backup copies of everything. Because that's what he did.
God.
And of course, this was all, like I said, on floppies.
Right.
And I was just thinking, okay, this man is a bit obsessive about his backups.
Well, you know, the first time you lose that really important file, it totally changes your perspective.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. His backup. If you follow his backup practices, you will never find yourself screwed up ever.
That's true. Bob is meticulous about backups, and I'm meticulous, but I think Bob has me beat. I actually do a nightly backup to hard drive. Every Friday, I do an off-site backup to my .Mac account, and then on the 1st and 15th of the month, I do DVD backups.
Wow. Wow, you're so far ahead of me. It's not even funny. Back to Leopard. Any other changes that you want to talk about right now?
Well, not so much the changes, but the happy surprises I found. Now, I was expecting to have several applications break and just simply not work. And I didn't know which ones they would be, but I assumed they would be the ones that I rely on day in and day out. And what I found is that all the applications that I need to use are working. Now, the exception is I have not been playing with FileMaker Pro yet. However, from FileMaker's notes about Leopard, all the features that I need to use will be working fine. But the thing that really surprised me was that most of the little items that I have in my menu bar, all these little extra add-ons, they kept working. And I expected every one of them to be broken and not run anymore. And actually, one of my favorites is this little menu add-on called Prefs Menu. Mm-hmm. And it's this free little utility. It's just fantastic. And it gives you all of your preference panes in a menu, in the menu bar. And it was broken in Tiger. All the icons were broken. In Leopard, it works perfectly. No update to the little application. Go figure.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love our platform.
So do I. And I'm just so pleasantly surprised and not surprised, because this is also what I expect from Apple. My transition into Leopard has been so smooth, and it has gone without major incident. I've just been totally pleased.
Good.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So now we'll see what I say at the end of next week after I've had time to really beat on this.
Yep, that's true. It's going to take a few days, at the very least, before we really get a firm idea of where we are, and it'll be interesting to see how Apple addresses this blue screen issue. So there should be lots more to report next week, in both the news and the context machine. Matter of fact, you know what? Why don't we try to get Bob or Ted on next week to talk about Leopard?
I think that sounds absolutely fantastic.
Maybe we can even get Bob and Ted on.
Yeah. Actually, that would be even better.
That would be fun. Yeah, actually, we're gonna shoot for that, listener. So, yeah.
But you know, I'm not picky. I'll take either one if we can't get both.
Okay, that'll work. All right, I think I hear the request line coming up. What about you?
Yeah, I can feel that about to happen.
Anonymous listener that has already purchased their copy of macOS 10.5 but hasn't installed it yet wants to know, is it safe, and what tips we might have for a smooth upgrade? Well, we covered part of that, Jeff, earlier in the context machine, but I think we can address it specifically here. First and foremost, backup.
Absolutely. Absolutely do a backup.
Absolutely do a backup before you upgrade, and my personal recommendation is archive and install.
I think that's an excellent bit of advice. And of course, with that advice, I did just the upgrade to see what would happen, and it went fine for me. But you know, that's part of my job, to rush in where angels fear to tread and lean into the curveball and see what I can break so that you don't have to.
Do you have any other metaphors you could throw into that?
I do, but I choose not to.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. So, yeah, do an archive and install.
Yeah,
I think that's a much better way to go.
That's our definite, absolutely and positively probably best piece of advice we could give to anyone. And, you know, we should probably be a little less geeky and explain what the heck an archive and install is. We sort of mentioned it before, but archive and install is an option you can choose. Is it under customize or options?
It's under options.
It is under options. So there's a button. There's during the installation process, at some point you'll get an options button.
And it will be at the bottom left-hand corner of the window.
Uh-huh. And if you click on that button, it'll give you a upgrade, erase and install, and archive and install option.
Right. And if you choose erase and install, you better have everything backed up because it's going to wipe out your hard drive.
Yeah, you need to be careful about that.
Right. If you choose archive and install, it will leave your user directory intact, all your preferences intact, everything that you expect when you're having your Mac experience, it'll all be there. Your system folder will get archived and moved off to the side, and a new one will be in its place.
Yeah, yeah. So that basically means that you can go back into that archived system and get anything out that you might need.
Right. And one thing to keep in mind when you do an archive and install, applications that need to add components at the main system level may stop working correctly or may stop working completely after an archive and install, and you might have to reinstall those applications.
Yeah.
And one of the common application suites that happens with would be the Adobe Creative Suite applications. However, from what I've heard from people, they have not had that issue with CS3 and Leopard.
Ah, fantastic. Well, I'm sure that they were hopefully at least thinking about Leopard when they released CS3. I'm sure they were.
I certainly hope so.
So that's our advice. It seems like it's mostly ready for primetime folks, and it should be safe, but you definitely want to do an archive and install, and you want to have everything backed up. It's only been, 2 days as of this recording since it's been released, and there are these reports of blue screen. And if that sort of thing makes you nervous, wait. Just sit on the sidelines and wait. Let the rest of us figure out your problems first.
Right, and if we come up with problems, you know we're going to be writing about them, so you can check the TMO website and see what kind of problems are coming up. You know we'll be reporting on them.
Yeah, you know it's pretty natural for both Jeff and I to just I'll install this. Where's the install button? Let me click it. And we like being on the bleeding edge. We have fun being on the bleeding edge, but of course sometimes that actually means you bleed. And if
it does,
being on the bleeding edge, I don't think that installing a boxed operating system from Apple qualifies as bleeding edge, but it's certainly leading edge when it's the first release of it. For us, it's not a big deal. But if that sort of thing makes you uncomfortable, just wait.
I have something else to add to that.
Sure.
If you are planning on installing Leopard on a machine that you use to get your job done, it's part of your livelihood, and you're in the middle of a project, don't install Leopard.
Oh, that's a good point, man. That's a great point.
Yeah, odds are you'll be okay, but why tempt fate? Get your project finished so you don't miss your deadline, then do your installation.
And with so many creative professionals on Macs, that's just really, really good advice. Get your projects done first. Or at the very least, install Leopard on a different partition, or if you have more than one machine, install it on the machine that's not your work machine. Just get your work done first. Keep the system that's working for you intact.
Right. And speaking of the graphic designers out there, right now, to the best of my knowledge, the only font management application outside of Apple's FontBook that is working completely and correctly across the board under Leopard is Extensa Suitcase, and you have to be running the latest version.
Mm-hmm.
So now some of the others, they might be working, but the companies haven't gotten back to me yet to let me know, and I haven't had a chance to install all of the different font management applications to test and see what breaks.
Right. All right, well, that's our advice, and I guess with that, we'll move on to listener comments.
Now, in our listener comments, one guest let us know exactly what he or she thought about the Greenpeace iPhone report. Here's their quote: "I'm for a cleaner environment, but these people are lunatics. A cell phone is an environmental hazard. Give me a break."
Well, I understand that. I think that we all would be surprised by some of the materials that might go into our electronic devices. We just kind of take it for granted, especially in the near disposable you know, environment that we have for these things these days. I think that Greenpeace is certainly looking for headlines, but I also think that their point about the fact that just because the iPhone stuff gets more headlines than their other stuff doesn't mean that they're not covering other stuff too. You know, yeah. It is important for someone to be watching out for this sort of thing because, quite frankly, you know, a lot of businesses are going to not care about what they're doing to the environment. They're not going to care about what they're doing to us. And you know, I think it's good for a watchdog agency to be out there.
You know, I have to agree with you. Watchdog agencies to help keep big business, corporation, enterprise, whatever you want to call it, to keep all of these guys in line so that we're not putting hazardous products into our body, near our body, back into the environment, whatever. I think that's really important. What disappoints me about the iPhone report that Greenpeace issued was that it really did come across like a headline-grabbing move.
Right, and it may well be. I think that Apple has been the subject of a lot of environmental protests, specifically simply because they're so high profile. I mean, we actually have had I can't remember the organization now. I'm sorry, folks. I'll blame that fever, but we've had environmental organizations say that they were protesting Apple for just that reason. And I think that's more common than one might think. But again, it doesn't mean that the root issue is necessarily a fake one.
Right.
That said, I kind of imagine that. You know, by the way, how funny is it? How very curious it is to have a company like Apple, which is considered so, you know, so hip and green and good and all these other things that aren't normally associated with corporations, being defended by a chemical industry trade group. I think there's a lot of irony there, and I'm referring to the bromide group called the Bromine Science and Environmental Forum. You know, that's a chemical industry trade group, folks, and they're the ones that are defending Apple. But I bet you, when everything is said and done, I bet you that it's going to turn out that the BSEF is absolutely correct, and that the chemicals that are being used in the iPhone are actually safe and they're reactive, et cetera, and don't pose any kind of hazard. But we probably won't know until Apple does release that information.
Assuming they do.
Yeah, assuming they do. Yeah. All right. Another listener shared their thoughts with us on our news style. Quote, he said, "I think Brian's sarcastic tone when reading news he doesn't approve of should be avoided. If you don't think something should be taken seriously, don't include it at all. If it's big enough to be included, give it some respect in the news section, then rip into it in the context machine if necessary." Fair enough.
There you go.
Fair enough. I do. You know, I have a very, very dry sense of humor, I tend to have a very open and active sense of humor. So, I have been letting some of that go into the news, and I apologize, folks. We actually, both Jeff and I, agree with this particular reader, and we think he's right. So, look for the news going on to be a little bit more straightforward.
You know, and the important thing for everyone to remember is that we do listen and read our listener comments. So please give us your feedback, because this show is yours. It's not just us sitting here talking. Let us know what you think so that we can make sure we're giving you the podcast you want.
Yep, absolutely. We're nothing without our listeners.
We'd be lonely.
We'd be kind of sad, really.
Yeah, well, there is that.
Even a tad pathetic. But fortunately, we aren't, because we do have listeners, and we've got great listeners, and our listenership has been growing. We thank everyone. You know, make sure you subscribe to us and at iTunes, and you know, thanks to everyone for all the support you've shown us, especially since the change when Ricky stepped down.
You know, I think that the transition from Ricky to Ricky, and then me being part of his team, and then now you being part of the team as well, and Ricky moving on, has gone pretty smooth. I do miss Ricky.
I miss Ricky too.
But I think that that we have a great dynamic, and the show is chugging along really well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So thanks again. Let's close this out.
I think that's a great idea. Now, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thank you for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom. That's recorded for TMO, and that's all for this week.
And you're already listening, so you might as well stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.